Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another exciting episode here at Purchase Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. I want to first thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning, and I want to also say I'm still mad at my daughter, so we'll get through that because she said some things to me, but we'll work past that because today's topic has to do with the thoughts in my head. Now, as we talk about the thoughts in my head, I want you to know that mental health issues does not only affect adults. Many children are suffering in silence, as many do not know what to do. Now, when we talk about not knowing what to do, how will you respond if your child told you that they were hearing voices, if they felt depressed or was anxious? Do you know the signs or symptoms of mental health disorders? Now, a lot of times parents would say, my child has experienced these things and I'm totally against placing my child on medication. So with today's topic, we're going to challenge some of those thoughts, beliefs, and perceptions as it relates to mental health amongst our youth. So I want to join with me Dr. Phoebe from True North Psychological Services located in Oceanside. So Dr. Phoebe, tell them a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I'm a clinical psychologist. True North Psychological Services in Oceanside. We work with a lot of military families, and we're in the process of opening an outpatient treatment facility for adolescents, teenagers, and individuals that might be suffering with some alcohol and drug symptoms, dependency symptoms. So we're just very blessed to be doing this work and just kind of putting it, you know, God put it in our heart to to serve the community at Oceanside.
Okay, I want to thank you. And we are neighbors, so we're both located in the Copperwood Center. And as you guys know, I am very friendly. So when I met her and I found out what she did, I was like, wow, she's a psychologist. So I need somebody to help me tag team some of these clients because I got so much to do. I don't have time to do all this, and I'm just one person. So when we start talking about the thoughts in my head, one of the questions came about is, can children or do they really suffer or demonstrate mental health issues? I want you guys to know the answer is yes. However, how would one know the symptoms? What are the causes? And how can such be prevented? My next question, do you know the difference between childhood developmental disorders and childhood mental health disorders? Now, when we talk about that, most people recognize ADD, ADHD, conduct disorder, autism, Asperger's. You know, we talk about Tourette's disorder. We talk about a lot of these pervasive childhood developmental disorders. But the problem is we start hitting the grown folks topics. When kids start coming home talking about they depressed, you're like, what the heck you mean you depressed? So today we're going to be addressing some of those symptoms. Because when it comes to mental health, one would agree that this has been a hot topic, especially considering when individuals committing crimes, individuals committing suicide, you know, crimes against humanity, the word mental health is frequently used and is very, what you call, interchangeable. However, most individuals also have a better understanding or perhaps are more willing to explore or provide assistance for mental health issues or concerns when the individual is an adult. So today we're going to be talking about what happens when the individual is a toddler, a teen, or a child. Now, Dr. Phoebe, question. When we start talking about children, what has been some of your experience in regards to trying to determine some of the symptoms as it relates to mental health disorders in regards to children or amongst our youth?
Well, I think I wanted to start off with, we call it mental health because it's part of what's really important to figure out the health of the whole human being in perspective. And so we want to first take the stigma out, like just like you take your child in for an annual to, you know, look at their physical health. We also want to encourage parents to seek out an assessment for mental health. Second is one of the things that we're really seeing in our clinics is that a lot of children are being marginalized because of their mental health systems and symptoms, and you know, the parents don't really have like a resource to go to get the support that they need, and so there's a place that we got to get better at supporting the parents, at supporting their children. And then the other thing is that I'm seeing, and you know, I work with several pediatricians, and they're seeing an increase of depressive symptoms, anxiety symptoms, OCD symptoms, and bipolar. Parents are, you know, saying, okay, well, it'll be a phase they'll grow out of, or they're just a sensitive child, and all of these are valuable information. However, with like physical health, when it's neglected, mental health can present in a lot bigger problems and symptomology if it is ignored.
Well, one of the things, Dr. Phoebe, when we talk about mental health versus physical health, like you said, we take our children to the doctor for routine physicals. We take them to get immunized. But when we start talking about mental health, a lot of times parents get scared because it's very taboo. But with kids, we look at their behaviors, and a lot of times we don't pay attention to what's going on in their head. And when we start talking about just the thoughts in my head, what are they thinking? And I find it very fascinating because when we're talking about children, basically they start playing, they talk to themselves, they do these things. But when it gets to a certain age where you still see them talking to themselves, saying things, you start trying to wonder in regard to their behavior. It's like, what am I looking at? Now, we have a caller calling in on the line. Let me log this caller on. Hi, this is Jeanette Abbey. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Persons Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Hey, Jeanette, this is Nick.
Okay, Nick, welcome. Thank you for joining us here at Persons Predicaments. So anything you want to share as it relates to the thoughts in my head from addressing mental health issues amongst our youth?
I just logged in. I'm trying to listen to the subject.
Gotcha. Okay. So, again, when we start talking about the child and in regards to mental health, and a lot of times we look and we think about the behavior. Now, I have some information, and it comes from basically the National Institute of Mental Health. And one of the things they talk about is transforming the understanding and treatment of mental illnesses. Because a lot of times parents are very ashamed, they're very embarrassed, it's very taboo, and a lot of times the diagnosis go under a radar, meaning are not under the radar, because a lot of times it gets missed, especially if you don't start seeing behavior problems. But I want to give the parents and give the children, I know many children should be at school, some information in regards to first. I want to say one of the things, Dr. Phoebe, that I see even in my practice as a licensed therapist is I'm getting a lot of calls from parents talking about my teen or my child is saying they're depressed. And one of the things we talk about depression, we want to know, okay, who are they around that say they're depressed? Where are they picking this up from? We watch a lot of television shows. We're watching, you know, things in the news we're watching, and we're kind of putting the depression with suicidality is one, so there's things we need to look out for, and also when individuals become frustrated. Now, I want to give the parents, even though we're talking about this, is mental health is an important part of overall health for children as well as adults, and for many adults who have mental disorder, symptoms were present but not recognized or addressed in childhood and youth. And what happens is for a lot of young persons with symptoms of mental disorders, the earlier treatment is started, the more effective it can be. because early treatment can prevent more severe lasting problems as the child grows up. Because, Dr. Phoebe, one of the things that I see not only is, and we're going to talk a little bit about the denial from the parents, but also the confusion and frustration from the child or the teen. What are some of the things that you see when you work with teenagers? And we're going to first talk about depression.
A lot of what I see with teenagers is the number one thing is the teenage years is a place where now they're going from being children to young adults. So the parents are not intervening as much to make up for, you know, the areas where the child is struggling as they used to when they were younger. So, you know, parents would, you know, offer them, you know, chocolate or, you know, go to the park. And that's, you know, that helps a lot with the socialization for younger kids. But as they are transferring now into their teenage years, and their list of activities are a lot less than they were when they were younger. And so now they have a higher level of expectation from their school systems, a higher level of expectation from their social network. And there is just that the actual social network that's necessary for them to expand and kind of go through their growing pains with others and look at it in a normalized way sometimes is gone because the parents are trying to give them space, mm-hmm. but they don't have the backup plan in terms of social support. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I want to say, Dr. Phoebe, too, is a lot of times with parents, they're bringing the children in because the parents may be going through a divorce, which is another topic
Absolutely.
I want to talk about, is some of the things that kids go through in regards to experiencing in their day-to-day life. You know, the loss of a friend, the loss of a pet, the loss of a loved one, a breakup of a relationship. But then sometimes when you're looking at kids in elementary school and you're talking about they're depressed, so I want to give the parents some warning signs. Even though it can be tough to tell if troubling behaviors in a child is just part of growing up or a problem that should be discussed with a health professional, but we also need to be aware of the signs and the symptoms that can last either weeks, months, sometimes even years. So if your child or teen might need help if he or she often feels anxious or worried, has very frequent tantrums, or is intensely irritable much of the time, which when we talk about teenagers, we think they're irritated all the time because they stay mad, has frequent stomach aches, headaches with no physical explanation. So when they start saying, I don't know what's wrong, they may be telling you the truth. They may be having trouble sleeping, including frequent nightmares, loss of interest in things he or she used to enjoy, avoid spending time with friends, or they can have trouble doing well in school or their grades decline. There may be issues with weight gaining, weight loss, diets excessively. They can have low or no energy, have spell of intense, you know, being exhausted all the time. Sometimes we look at, while we may see symptoms of self-harm, such as cutting or burning of their skin, they can engage in risky destructive behavior, smoke, drink, use drugs, has thoughts of suicide, or thinks that his mind is controlled or is out of control or hear voices. Those are just some of the warning signs. What do you think about that, Dr. Phoebe?
You know, my perception is when humans are feeling out of control, they use one of three ways. They act out, they act in, or they clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're starting to act out, that's when you'll see more physical aggression, drug, alcohol abuse. More of the tagging, more of just a very aggressive demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're acting in, that's when they're more withdrawing. They might be doing more of like the controlling of food, really trying to kind of just maintain this in
mm-hmm.
like this pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And then the third way that we see humans is that they clean up. And so these are very indicative ways that the teenager is dealing with some dynamics and they don't know how to deal with it in a healthy manner.
Gotcha.
So they're coming out at, you know, as drug abuse, harm to self, or excessive like fear of germs and and, you know, order, disorder, and that's what I'm saying at least.
And you know what, Dr. Phoebe, I want to give the parents some information, and because it may be helpful for children and teens to have several emergency numbers in their cell phones instead of just their friends, you know, you might want to have them have the phone number of a trusted friend or relative that they can call. You want to have them have a non-emergency number for local police departments. And one of the things I like, Dr. Phoebe, when I was doing this research in regards to this topic, is I'm finding a lot of times individuals don't want to talk because they get tired of telling their story and they don't think that people are going to believe them. You can now text. They have what's called a crisis text line. So one of the numbers that I'm looking at, it says 741-741. And that's one of the things, which I'm going to be giving you guys way more information. But you can also, if your child is contemplating suicide, don't be afraid to have them evaluated to determine if the child needs a 5150 or a 5250. A lot of times we miss the warning signs when it comes to depression and suicidality because adults as well as children or attempting suicide at a very young age, especially if they are victim of bullying or if there are things going on in the home or if they have experienced some grave loss and they're trying to find where they fit in society. So they have, and I'm going to give you the number to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The number is 1-800-273-TALK. So 1-800-273-8255. And if you want to call in on the show and you want to speak with Dr. Phoebe or myself, you can give us a call at 516-387-1914. So, Dr. Phoebe, I gave some information in regards to some of the symptoms of depression. Like I said, that's one of the things. That's one of the main areas that we see, especially with we're talking about PTSD or, you know, because sometimes some of these diagnoses can be interchangeable. We could be looking at one thing, and it could be a mass of two or three different things, and that's where we get kind of confused, and most parents don't want their children or child to be labeled. So even though a lot of times we look at the self-mutilating behaviors in regards to individuals cutting, self-mutilating, people don't know that excessive tattooing and body piercing is also a form of self-mutilation. And I always tell individuals that that is always about power and control. Meaning, if I can't control anything around me, I can control this. But it can also become very obsessive. Now, we're going to get away a little bit from the depression. Let's talk a little bit about anxiety. What do you want the parents to know when we're talking about an anxiety disorder?
I think, you know, the anxiety, I mean, there everybody has to have a, you know, a healthy level of anxiety. Anxiety is not like... Anxiety is not the demon word. It's really just the balance of where this anxiety is being expressed, how is it being expressed, and also if it's being, if it's, you know, my thing is if the anxiety is helping the person to become a better version of themselves, you know, not as problematic. But if the anxiety is getting in the way of personal growth, relationships, and, you know, just kind of having their own thoughts and their own will to grow, then we've got to look at it a little bit more problematically. The other thing is with anxiety is what's really helpful for teenagers is that parents normalize that they have been through times when they struggled with anxiety as well. And how? What are some skills that they have used to deal with their anxiety? So, you know, coming up with like a list of coping skills that you guys have, and you know, people have in their home, so that when the teenager or the child feels anxious, that they can engage in. So, for example, for you know, children, you might have like an anxiety box, you know, in the house, which is like do, you know, jumping jacks, here's a squeeze ball, you know, write, draw. There is a lot of drawing activities for children that help with anxiety and depression. Also, the same would be really helpful for a teenager.
Okay. Now, Dr. Phoebe, Now, when we talk about anxiety, we talk about excessive worrying. We talk about are some of the signs that we see is they become preoccupied a lot of times in their thoughts. They get nervous. You know, and some of the times, and when we see that, we also think about ADHD, which is a hyperactivity. But we have to know the difference. And like I said, parents, don't be afraid to take your child to be seen or to be tested to find out if there are some things that are going on with your child. Because a lot of times, and I always tell parents, when you know better, you do better. Because a lot of times we don't want nobody to know, you know, because in most cases, like you said, there's a family history. There's things going on. I mean, it could be the father, it could be the mother, you know. And so we want to make sure that we're not just in denial and denying our children the help that they need. You know, Dr. Phoebe, as you're sitting here watching me multitask, and I'm sitting up here clicking and pointing and doing all this stuff, you're going to be like, how in the heck is she doing this? I guess some people call it OCD, ADD, whatever you call it, but now I'm clicking, 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 and ain't nothing happening. So if you want to call in and you want to join in on this conversation, give me a call again, like I said, at 516-387-1914. Now, I want to share. I'm looking at, and I want to go back to, it says the ages. Do you know that children can start developing some of these issues in regards to between the ages of 6 and 12? It's like, wow, here you are in elementary school, and you may be already exhibiting signs of depression, anxiety, or some type of mental health issue or concern. And you're only 6 years old.
And if you think about the divorces, they're happening, you know, a lot of children. This is the time when they're, you know, their parents are getting divorced. And so this is their first, you know, area of, you know, change and extreme maturity that happens around that.
Correct.
Time.
And, you know, and I'm going to do a show talking about how divorce affects children, because like I said, a lot of times parents are coming in and, you know, they're concerned about their child because of the disruption in their home and things that are going on, which could be, you know, because we talk about depression and anxiety, part of it can be situational, part of it can be biological, part of it can be environmental, because there can be a lot of causes and a lot of factors. But it just blows my mind when I look at the age of how it can occur between the ages of 6 and 12. Now, I'm looking at an article, and it's written by thewholechild.info. And according to what they indicate, child depression and even as much as anxiety can occur, and although the symptoms may not be the same, but additionally, children respond very well to treatment if they get help early. Now, we talked about some of the issues in regards to depression, but when we start talking about anxiety, anxiety disorders are at a higher risk for depression. Even though we know that a lot of times depression runs in the family, but sometimes we wonder if anxiety is learned. You know, if they see their parents always, you know, worrying and crying and, you know, rocking. Because I remember I had a grandma. My grandma used to always rock. And I used to be like, why is she rocking? Or she always wanted some coffee, you know, or a cigarette. Let me calm my nerves, you know. So sometimes we wonder if some of our kids have developed some of these coping skills, because a lot of times individuals don't know what to do. And part of it, and I want to say, is actually teaching parents coping skills so that they will basically know how to help their child, because their child is modeling their behavior. What do you think about that?
I mean, we've all been into a conference or, you know, a meeting or house where an adult is overly anxious and all of a sudden we feel, you know, that shortness of breath and that heaviness on our heart. And, you know, if we are, you know, I mean, we're adults, and if you think about how that affects a child, every time they're in our presence and we have, you know, our anxiety running the show, then it's definitely transferable to them. they learn how to deal with situations that could be challenging in ways that are anxious.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working really hard to work on the solution, but we are a lot of times fixated on the problem. And so one of the things I do encourage parents to do is to be transparent and say, hey, this is coming up. I'm feeling a little, anxious because I'm not sure, if my resources or how I can get through this. These are ways that I've done in the past and that have helped. And don't be afraid to take some time out for yourself. If you're feeling like your anxiety is contributing to your kids mm-hmm. acting out, just allow yourself to, go back in the room or your study or your backyard and just kind of do some deep breathing and refocusing and then coming back. It's always so important for them to show them just not how we deal with it in the middle of the problem, but also how we move through to the solution and decrease the anxiety.
Gotcha. Because we have to teach them how to express their feelings, because a lot of times it's giving the children the right vocabulary and the proper words. Now, if you want to, like I said, the internet has been a great source in regards to developing and gathering information. So we are actually almost halfway through our show, and I'm saving the best for last when we get to the sticky diagnosis or a lot of the symptoms that I'm seeing, especially in my practice when it's coming in regards to kids and teenagers. And I want to first say bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder, in my opinion, is becoming more and more confusing because we have bipolar 1, bipolar 2. We have the manic episodes. We have, when we're talking about bipolar, some parents are being told that their children are bipolar schizoaffective disorder, and it becomes more and more confusing. So when we look at bipolar disorder, we're looking at the symptoms as well as anxiety, because they have their lows and they have their highs. But one of the things that, and I did a show, Dr. Phoebe, about bipolar disorder, and we talked about the negative thoughts. We talked about the negativity, period. And, sometimes we look at our kids and we think that they're just going to be negative anyway, or, my kid don't like me, they never have nothing nice to say. So we start normalizing that behavior, but yet sometimes we miss the fact that they may be having some serious mood swings. And I'm finding that they are, and we're not even talking about medication regimen yet, because that's a whole nother topic within itself. When we start talking about bipolar disorder, how would a parent know if their child is bipolar? And basically, like I said, learning how to trust us. Because when we're talking to parents and we're telling parents what we see, a lot of times parents are in denial. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to believe it. They're like, how the hell my child become bipolar? Or they want to blame it on the other parent. So I want to first say, if you are being told that your child is exhibiting or demonstrating certain behaviors, blaming the other parent is not going to help, because all that does is increase more anxiety in the child and also in the parent. So let's talk a little bit about bipolar disorder.
Okay, so just to clarify, bipolar disorder is really mood related. It is not per se personality related. It's very much mood related. So a lot of parents will say, like, okay, well, in the last couple of weeks, he's been like more like my child. He's had the energy and he's been more interactive and he's had better eye control. And I haven't seen that version of him for months. I mean, he's been in his room and sleeping a lot and, not eating. And so I've seen that depressive version of him, but this is my child. I'm getting more hopeful because they're seeing more of their traditional, baby, like the interactive one, the one that, their mood, they're more open. Their mood is,
keep going.
Their mood is in the right place. They have, they're more energetic. They're interested in activities. So, That's when we start considering a diagnosis of bipolar. If this is happening during hormonal changes for young females, we got to be mindful of that because, you know, the hormones do have a great impact. However, if you're seeing your child have, you know, periods of, you know, more than a week or so of depression and just, you know, not feeling like becoming a part of and total isolation and then, you know, this change in mood that, you know, it's almost like a they're on or off, might be a good time to come in for an assessment. One of the things is undiagnosed and unevaluated long term, it might have a little bit more of a problematic issue because as kids get older with bipolar and if it's not, you know, managed, it might come across, come across in drug abuse or sexual promiscuity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the things is kind of just identifying it earlier on so that when the manic episodes are happening where the thrill-seeking areas are not highly destructive to the teenager.
And you know what? And it's really interesting that you talk about the destruction because as I'm looking at teenmentalhealth.org, it talks about bipolar disorder and the causes of bipolar disorder and who is at risk. It indicates that less than 2% of people have bipolar disorder, and that could be any type. And it is almost equally as prevalent among women and men, or basically young ladies and young men, and it usually begins in the late teens to the early 20s. Now, symptoms of bipolar disorder can be basically subdued or extreme, but mild bipolar symptoms may sometimes be confused with being a teenager. And I think that's where we miss the mark a lot of times because we just think a lot of this just is normal behavior. Because a typical teenager's strife does not cause bipolar or any mental illness, but bipolar disorder is a disorder of mood control in the brain that is thought to be caused by a combination of genetics and the environment. Now, because bipolar disorder has a large genetic component, immediate family members of someone with bipolar disorder or at a much higher risk of developing the disorder than people without bipolar disorder in the family. So as we know, family plays a role, substance abuse and addiction plays a role, you know, so there's a lot of different things that can factor into having or being diagnosed with a bipolar disorder. So some parents may say, how will I know if my child is bipolar? Or, you know, what am I supposed to do? We know that with bipolar disorder, it should only be diagnosed by a medical doctor, a clinical psychologist, or a trained health provider who has spent time with the individual and has conducted a proper mental health assessment. Because as we know, diagnoses are complicated with many nuisances. And please do not attempt to diagnose someone based on the symptoms you read in magazines or on the internet. If you are concerned, speak to a trained professional, because we have a bad habit of walking around telling people, oh, my child is just bipolar. And we give them that label and that stigma, and then they will continue to start acting it out. So we don't want to do that. And I don't know why every time I tell people I go on the radio, for some reason my phone's just be ringing off the hook. So when we start talking about bipolar disorder, I want to go into, like I said, there's a bipolar 1 and a bipolar 2. And with a bipolar 1, the teenager must experience at least one manic episode, although he or she will likely experience depressive episodes. And with bipolar 2 disorder, the teenager must experience at least one depressive episode and one hypomanic episode. Now, this hypomanic episode is less severe version of the manic, and these are some things you look for: feeling sad and low most of the day, losing interest and pleasure in most activities, losing or gaining a considerable amount of weight, eating a lot more or a lot less than usual. Lord, if it's a teenager, I want them eating up all my food. What do you think, Dr. Phoebe? Difficulty sleeping or sleeping all the time, restlessness or a sense of moving in slow motion, fatigue, lack of energy, feeling worthless or guilty for no reason, difficulty thinking or concentrating, reoccurring thoughts of death or suicide. So those are just some of the things that we look for. And when we talk about manicky, they have an inflated self-esteem. They have little need for sleep, need to continue talking, meaning that the teenager just won't shut up. They either having too many thoughts at once, feeling a pleasure or thought in his or her head, acting distracted or unable to focus, increased in goal-directed activity, excessive involvement with risky activities with painful consequences. That is an issue, and that's where I think a lot of parents think that, you know what, this is just what they do. And that's not always the case, because the one thing is we want to protect our teens as well as we want to protect our children. So if you have any questions for myself or for Dr. Phoebe, give us a call at 516-387-1914. And like I said, the thoughts in my head, we have to come up and do better when it comes to understanding mental health issues, so that we do not have young adults or older adults out there feeling helpless, hopeless, and feeling that no one cares, because we do care. Now, I want to share some information because, like I said, we still got the main two, because, like I said, I know it's going to be kind of difficult, but I want to say a lot of times when we start talking about addressing mental health issues amongst our youth, we have what's called diagnosed, drugged, and discarded. Individuals, when they're diagnosed, they feel labeled. When we talked about being drugged, we talked about the medication compliance and the medication regimen. And being discarded, most people feel that nobody's listening and nobody cares. And that's not the case. Now, like I said, appearances can be deceptive. Individuals can feel very frightened. But one of the things is we have to handle this with compassion and care. We have to have compassion, acceptance, and respect towards others, including our children. Now, when we start talking about that, and when we're looking at this from a different perspective, we want to offer hope. Now, we have 22 minutes left on the show. I want to talk about schizophrenia. When I first went and I was working on my master's degree, there was what we call the DSM-4. They had DSM 4R, then it was 4, now it's 5. So we got 4TR. We got all these different manuals and books and things that we have to look at. We got all these different TV shows out there. They have the one with the doctor who has Asperger's or autistic. So we're, you know, yes, the doctor. So we're getting to the point where we're trying to put a lot of information out there for individuals, but yet we're still a little confused. Now, I want to talk about schizophrenia, Dr. Phoebe, because, like I said, when I was in school, they were not giving kids, diagnosis of schizophrenia. They would say either they were bipolar, or they would say that they were manic depressive, and they just started seeing post-traumatic stress disorder, which with PTSD is someone witnessing a traumatic event or being in a traumatic event, and that traumatic event could be anything that they consider to be traumatic. But when we start talking about schizophrenia has two things. That is audio and visual hallucinations. And I want to let the parents know that these kids are not crazy. They hear and they see what they hear and they see. And part of this is trying to live a normal life with the symptoms of schizophrenia when we talk about the audiovisual hallucination. And do you know, Dr. Phoebe, that a lot of times when we look at a homeless population, a lot of them have a diagnosis of schizophrenia? Because there's different types of schizophrenia, especially when we talk about the paranoid type. So let's talk a little bit about our youth and schizophrenia.
Schizophrenia, you know, it's one of those that can actually be identifiable in MRI. And you will see a lot of children. It used to be diagnosable in the later teenagers and early 20s, and I used to have parents go, okay, my child passed the, you know, schizophrenia age now, and parents were going, okay, well, we passed the autism age, and then we passed the schizophrenia age, and And when they have done MRI studies, they have found some similarities in the brain structure between schizophrenic children and children that also have autism. One of the things is we only know what we know. And the information that we know is that children have a period early in their childhood that they do engage in imaginary play. But if you ask that child, what is your daughter, your doll tell you or whatever, like they're like, well, she said this and this and this. And I said, okay, does she talk to you? And she's, my daughter, she's 5, and she'll be like, no, she's not real silly. And so they can engage in imaginary play. They're not actually hearing the voices or seeing, outside. They've created them by choice. Now, when we talk about schizophrenia, these are when the voices and the visual hallucinations are not by choice. They're not comforting. They could come across as very scary. They could come across as demanding or asking the child to do things that they really know that they don't want to do. And one of the top things, again, is to kind of have that place of dialogue where, you're paying attention to how often your child is bringing something like that up. And when they're bringing it up, not that you have to enable it by indulging the child in their fantasy, but kind of also creating like a baseline of where your child, has, their fantasy land and where your child has this version of is more like problematic for them. And the thing is with schizophrenia is that you're looking to find to see if there's a psychotic episode. And with that is, again, it goes back to delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech, and then grossly disorganized or catatonic behavior. So if your child is all of a sudden sitting in the corner and talking to, an imaginary person, be curious. Ask what's going on. What are you seeing? What is this person telling you to do? And then if it looks like they're having a hard time with it because they can't differentiate it from the truth, it's time to get them in for an assessment.
And you know what? And that is true because a lot of times individuals don't know when to bring them in. But I want to say that schizophrenia also has a genetic component, although not in all cases, but birth trauma, the fetal brain damage in the utero increases the risk for schizophrenia. They've also indicated that recent research also suggests that a significant marijuana use may trigger the onset of schizophrenia in youth who are at risk for the illnesses. Now, mushrooms is another one. And it's interesting, Dr. Phoebe, because I did a show talking about teens, tweens, and marijuana use. And a lot of parents or a lot of people have this perception that I don't mind my child smoking marijuana. But when they don't realize that when you smoke marijuana, you see things and you hear things. So one of the things I always do when I'm working with teenagers or kids is I want to know if they have a history of drug use, because I need to know if it's a chemical-induced psychosis or if it's actually really schizophrenia. Because, like I said, and I'm going to throw it out there again, you can challenge me on it, you can call, you can fuss at me, I don't care. Marijuana basically has a significant or has been used to trigger, meaning it is a trigger. I'm not saying it caused, but it can trigger the onset of schizophrenia in youth who are at risk of the illness, and individuals who have an immediate family member with schizophrenia should avoid using marijuana or other drugs. Because what happens is individuals will self-medicate. So, again, they will self-medicate. We know that schizophrenia is a psychotic disorder that often begins in the late adolescence or early adulthood. But like I said, we're finding it in kids at a very young age. My granddaughter, I told my granddaughter's mother that she was schizophrenic when she, I noticed it when she was like 1 or 2 years old. And the mother would get mad and was like, she's talking to the wall or she's, you know, talking to herself. No, she sees somebody. She hears someone. But individuals have a hard time believing that because they don't see it. But the voices are real. And what happens is, like Dr. Phoebe was saying, you have to get in touch and you have to know what are the voices saying to your child. What are the voices telling your child to do? Because that is very, very important to know. Now, we are kind of running out of time. We have 14 minutes left on the show. Now, the next one besides schizophrenia, like we talked about, which is the delusion, the audio, the visual hallucinations, they are real. I want to talk about dissociative identity disorder, multiple personalities. You know, kids be watching Beyonce and Beyonce become, who's she, Sasha or whatever the name she says she is. You know, we start trying to build a little alter ego or talking about, well, my name is not so-and-so, my name is this. But do you realize that there are really individuals, even teenagers, that have multiple personalities, which we don't call them multiple personalities? We call it dissociative identity disorder. I'm finding it very challenging with parents that are bringing my kids or teens to my office, and there may be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different people in one person. And one of the things I want to say before I pass it over to Dr. Phoebe is one of the things that I always look for or explore is childhood trauma. When there have been some type of childhood trauma or some type of child molestation or rape, you will definitely find dissociative identity disorder because if so-and-so couldn't protect me, this person is going to protect me. I've seen where it's been, it could be a female, but the host of characters can be a male, it could be a female, it could be a child, it could be a variety of characters. But what happens is if you're noticing that your child is having time spans where they're blocking out time, don't remember the date, been gone for a while and they checked out, voice sound different, handwriting is different, dressing differently, they may be dealing with dissociative identity disorder. Dr. Phoebe, tell the listeners what you want them to know about that.
You know, our mind has like a fantasy of what it looks like. And when trauma happens, a different version of reality has to occur. And I want to be very clear that DID is it's quite a rare one compared to other. There is a detachment disorder. There's a dissociative.
Yep.
And people deal with trauma in different ways. They might, have an amnesia. They might have, just kind of feel like they're operating like a machine. But when we're talking about DID, we're talking about, someone that has, their brain has said, you know what, being in our experience with what you remember is too painful, and we got to come up with different alters to help us cope with these situations. And so the alters usually have a function. They have a job to either strengthen the initial person. The initial person, the individual might not know that they have multiple personality. They might just be very confused about what just happened. They might be forgetful. They don't know. You'll ask them, like, where are you? And they're like, I don't know. It's very difficult for them to kind of figure out what's going on. And with therapy, it helps to figure out what are the roles for each of these personalities, and it also helps that the main person to figure out how to communicate and be aware of those other alters. Again, DID is very rare. However, with children being exposed to different kinds of medications, to different kinds of drugs and the different kinds of additives that are being used in the drugs and different kinds of socializations. There is a part of that that could be socialized for the child. However, you can tell if your child is, you know, if it's causing a little bit more of significant distress, and like Jeanette said, you're seeing like a different kid that is wearing different makeup or different hairstyles, or, you know, is really into different voice, different handwriting, that would be a good time to come and get them evaluated.
Thank you. You know, Dr. Phoebe, I found an article. I woke up this morning and I wasn't hearing voices, even though I heard my stomach growling, but it wasn't voices, it was my stomach. But I heard the news on the news, and it kind of shocked me with what's going on in our world, our country, our culture. And when I heard it, I have to look it up. And they indicated that people or individuals with a history of self-mutilation, bipolar disorder, depression, and drug abuse can now seek a waiver to join the United States Army under an anonymous policy enacted in August, according to documents obtained in the USA. Now, I started thinking, we already concerned about cops shooting individuals. We concerned about individuals going up shooting up churches. Now we are about start letting individuals in the military, as they lift their ban on waivers to recruit individuals with a history of mental health issues. I was like, wow. Now, I'm not a politician, don't want to be a politician. But you know what? This kind of concerns me, because when we're looking at it and it says a decision to open Army recruiting to those with mental health conditions come as the service faces the challenging goal of recruiting 80,000 new soldiers through September 2018 to meet the year's goal of 69,000. The Army accepted more recruits who fared poorly on aptitude tests, increased the number of waivers granted for marijuana use, and offered hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses. That right there is of concern. This I heard this on the news this morning. So it was on the news this morning, and as I look at this article, and you asked me the date, oh, it's today's date. It is November 13, 2017. So I heard it on the news this morning. So I was like, you know what? Let me see if this is true or am I hearing things? Because I just could not believe what I was hearing. So basically, in order to make your quota, and it says, it is a red flag, she said. The question is, how much of a red flag is it? And it indicates, it says, while bipolar disorder can be kept under control with medication, self-mutilation, where people slash their skin with sharp instruments, may signal a deeper mental health issue. But according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, a mental health disorder, which is published by the American Psychiatric Association, they found that if self-mutilation occurs in a military setting, it says that it will and should be disruptive for a unit. But soldiers slashing his or her wrist own skin could result in blood on the floor and the assumption of a suicide attempt and a potential need for medical evacuation from war zone or other astronomical places. I was floored by that, because here it is. We have to figure out how we're going to treat these individuals before we start trying to send them to combat and war. I'm like, wow. And I'm not saying that individuals cannot function, because I want to give you guys some information, even though we have 6 minutes left on the show. But I want you to Google that and look that up, because we got to think about that. We need to reevaluate that. I would want to know, okay, are you going to put my child on the front line because he's schizophrenic? Is this going to be a new way of trying to handle this? I just don't get it. I really did not understand that article. But you know what? It's there. So I didn't make it up. I just showed it to you. You're like, what's the date? So let me give you some information in regards to treatment and support for the types of treatment. Even though there are many types of mental health disorders, which Dr. Phoebe and I talked about it, there are basically types of treatment that to help support your child and the family that individuals can receive while they are going through these challenges and changes in regards to the thoughts that may be in the individual's head. Now, the types of insurance individuals have are also another important factor. Treatment takes the place of a variety of settings, including outpatient settings such as clinics or hospitals, community-based services such as treatment provided in your school, home, or the community, and inpatient settings such as hospitals and residential treatment centers. Services should be provided in at least a restrictive environment, which means that your child will receive treatment within their normal daily environment, such as home, school, and community whenever possible. Now, I'm going to give you guys some information, and these are basically in regards to what treatment should be. Treatment should have a specific goal and measurable outcome so you know when it is and in regards to what it is, and what's not working. I always ask my family, what's working for you, what didn't work? It should be evidence-based, which means that the research has shown that a particular treatment has proven to be positive, effective for the child or young people who participated in it, and it should include you. You as a parent have the right to thoroughly understand what your purpose or the purpose of the treatment is and how you will know if it's effective. I always say keep a journal. Keep a journal, document. You don't want to walk into the doctor's office and be like, and don't know. Yeah, what is it? I don't know. You know, but journal. Write things down. Now, the types of mental health treatment and services, first is an assessment. We have behavioral therapy. Behavior therapy is a broad term for treatment that focuses on the child's behavior and the thoughts and feelings that affect it. Behavior therapists also look at how the environment might have an impact on those behaviors. Because with behavior therapy, the basic goal for the therapy is to reinforce the behavior you want to see and to eliminate the behavior you don't want to see. We have what's called case management services. We have child psychiatric services. And with the psychiatric services, we talked about medication regimen, and we only have 3 minutes left in the show, so I kind of was talking too much. But when we're talking about having a child evaluated by a psychiatrist, please don't be afraid of the medication. But you have to be honest. That's one of the things I want to say about medication, because there's different types of medication to use to treat different things. Now, when you're giving a child a combination of meds, you don't want to have them drugged up, doped up, and can't function. But by that same token, if you document what they're thinking, what they're feeling, how they're feeling, it kind of helps, I believe, the psychiatrist know what is the right medication regimen for that child. And parents, please do not skip doses. And do not leave it up on your child, their own medication, especially if you know that they are struggling with, you know, depression, anxiety, or if they become suicidal, or they're having dissociative identity disorder, or hearing voices. Make sure you store the medication in a secure place so that your other children do not get a hold of it and that other people don't start stealing or selling the medication. In regards to not only the psychiatric services, you have child therapy. And that's a broad term used to describe a variety of therapy methods to provide the child mental health professionals used to help maintain and improve their mental and emotional functioning. You have cognitive therapy, and cognitive therapy also has to do, and it's combined with behavioral therapy also, but it's a type of therapy to help your child correct negative or distorted thinking and may lead to troublesome feelings and behaviors. It was so funny today. I was working with someone, and the kid got mad on the phone and said, is Jeanette going to be my therapist? She's a B-I-T-C-H. I started cracking up. I said, call me Miss B. You know, we got the cognitive behavioral therapy. We have community living support, counseling, crisis residential services, day program and activity services. We have emergency and crisis services, exposure therapy, family therapy, group therapy. Now, sometimes clients may have to go into an inpatient mental health provider or place, interpersonal therapy, medication, and administrative review. Now, we have 60 seconds left on the show. Dr. Phoebe, I want to thank you for joining me here. Dr. Phoebe is at True North Psychological Services located in Oceanside. I am Jeanette Abney. I'm also a licensed therapist. I'm located in Orange County, Riverside County, and San Diego County, so I'm a workaholic, so I'm all over the place. So if you want to reach me, you can find me on Psychology Today. Where can they find you at, Dr. Phoebe?
You can call 760-810-1440.
Okay. We got to get you going with this teen and these drugs and alcohol stuff. I don't want to do that in Oceanside. I don't mind doing it in Orange County, but I don't want to deal with that here. But I do got to go to Compton because they're waiting on me to come to Compton. So I want to thank you for joining me here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. Be tuned in for another episode next week. Don't know what I'm going to talk about. It's either going to have to do with financial literacy or we're going to be talking about how divorce affects children. So,
okay, we're going to have to figure out what the voice in my head going to tell me to do.
So, because stuff just wasn't working today. Again, thank you for joining me here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, remember, you've got this. Bye-bye.